more people will lose their lives if we continue down this current path of anti-science that we're going down here in the United States. It's a very dangerous time for all of us. And, you know, the irony here is that this is a country that was built on science and technology. And the wonders of, you know, modern life are due to the fact that this country valued scientists and it promoted and supported scientists for decades. And now, because certain areas of science have become inconvenient, again, to certain ideologically driven individuals and groups and industries, we find science under an attack. You know, again, there's almost no precedent. You have to go back to, you know, the early 1900s, Stalin's Russia, and the assault on scientists that happened then.
Michael Mann, we have to leave it there. I want to thank you for being with us from the University of Pennsylvania. I'm Mimi Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Fresh Air Community Radio, with 42 years of quality programming. For your listening pleasure, the following program was recorded earlier for broadcast at this time.
Hi, this is Al McFarlane, host of The Conversation with Al McFarlane. You're listening to 90.3 FM, KFAI, Minneapolis.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Giorgi Senna, and I am the Afrodescendientes Managing Editor. And right now, I am in Salvador, Bahia, Brazil, and I'm hosting in the name of Al that still couldn't be present. So we have a few highlights of our subjects today. I'm gonna mention them here to you guys to have a guide. We're gonna talk with the council member Latricia Vetal, that she represents the ward 4, the fourth ward, which is located in the northernmost part of the city. She started her career in public service 20 years ago when she left the corporate world and started working in community health. Latricia served of health policy and advocacy at North Point Health and Wellness from 2006 to 2021. In this role, she brought together coalitions of hundreds of community members and young people to push for public health policy change at the state and local level. In 2017, led to a at-large seat on the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, where she served as the Vice President and Chair of Intergovernmental and Legislative Committee. In 2021, Latricia was the first Black woman to be elected to serve as the City Council member for the fourth ward. In her first term in office as the Chair of Public Health and Safety Committee, secured millions of dollars in public funding for the North Side and helped repair years of mistrust between city government and residents. In her free time, Latricia enjoys gardening, seeing the city by scooter, taking her fur baby, Bobby, for long walks and travel. Welcome, Ms. Latricia Vetal, to our program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Welcome. We have also here the president of our constant collaborator, Antonio Russell, a Peruvian American. And in the spirit of this show being an international show, Miss Latricia from Brazil, from Bahia. So I want to welcome you to the show. Will be substituting Mr. L today. I'm kind of a little bit nervous.
Don't be nervous.
For such a responsibility, you know, it's a big shoe to fill. But I will try today.
I think it's a wonderful and exciting show that we have for our listeners today. And I think that maybe we should start it with a question to Council Member Vito about, well, you're a relatively new council member. What are some of the key initiatives that you are working on? You've been in the council now since 2021, the first Black woman elected to the Minneapolis City Council for the 4th Ward. What are some ideas that you're working on? What are you excited about for the future of the 4th Ward?
Thank you. That is such a good question. The most exciting thing for me in the 4th Ward, or just North Minneapolis, I'm not sure if you all know, but where I represent is considered some of the most underserved neighborhoods in all of Minneapolis. And so it's been such a good thing to have, like, constituent services. People care about basic city needs, you know, trash removal, snow removal. Public safety has always been at the forefront of what people who I represent want to see. So that's looking at how do we have good policing in this community, because my community does want police. You know, what role does community play in public safety? So everything doesn't have to be about policing, but what role does community play in that? And a lot of it is centered around addiction and, like, how do we get folks the help and services they need in this community? I would say those are the most exciting things. Basic city needs, livability issues, you know, like, people want a clean, thriving neighborhood. And then economic development, you know, getting more small businesses, more amenities in the ward has been a priority also. And that's happening, and I'm really excited about that.
That is super exciting. Now, a question to follow up with you about livability. I think that's is something that oftentimes get mentioned, but then the concrete different initiatives, there can be so many different things that help make livability possible in a community or in a ward. What are some of the priorities that you see for livability, you know, building daily quality of life for fourth ward residents? What are some of the things that you're working on?
Number one is public safety. Like I said, that's the biggest concern here. So, like, traffic concerns are an issue in this ward. We know we're down a significant amount of folks in the police department. So we've been working on, like, how do we incorporate technology into public safety? So, like, we had legislation at the state for red light street cameras, you know, to capture some of the people who are speeding and running red lights. So that's one of the things I would say. You know, my office has kicked off initiatives around, you know, community-centered public safety initiatives, and like, folks who live in this community, work, play in this community, like, monitoring the public safety in our hotspots. That's one thing. And just like, general, creating any type of conversations with folks about how do you report things to 311? How do you report to your council member? How do you report to your mayor? And those are generally livability things, like street cleanup, trash. People want a clean, thriving neighborhood. And so there's always a conversation with me when I'm at the grocery store about, like, how do you get the snow removed? My alley didn't get plowed well enough, you know, like, and we have challenges here in Minnesota that other parts of the country don't. And so, you know, like, right now the big thing is spring cleanup. People want all the trash that's been buried under the snow, even though we didn't have much snow this year, but people want that cleaned up, you know, like we all feel like a clean, nice looking, the aesthetics of a neighborhood really plays a part in the violence that happens, or like what people do on your community street. So that's been a big deal. And I have seen, you know, since I took office, I have seen changes for the good in certain parts of the neighborhood. And I feel the love from my constituents when, you know, when those things shift from what was not good to, like, so much better.
That is such a positive take on things too, because I feel that, you know, livability for me, a big part of that too is the level or the amount of beauty that we experience living in a place. And if Absolutely. We want to feel good about ourselves and our community and our future, beauty is such a magical thing to have around us. And I applaud the efforts that you're doing for that. And I think that's super exciting. And I see that our host, Al McFarlane, has joined us. I don't want to talk too much and not let...
No. Go right ahead. My equipment failed me, so I apologize. It's wonderful to have a great team of colleagues and friends who are able to make things move. Council member, great to see you. Thank you for being here.
Always good to see you, Mr. McFarlane.
Sure. So, Antonio, go ahead. This is great. I was enjoying listening. Go right ahead.
Well, I wanted to ask a little bit more about beauty and connection and connectivity. I know for a fact that we all want more beauty, more art in our lives. We all want more connection to nature. We all want the ability to be able to safely walk and maybe ride a bicycle and maybe connect to transit easily. Are you working on any initiatives like that? Do you see some progress occurring in those fronts?
Yes, I am working on initiatives like that. And you're so right, Antonio, about just the beauty of it. Minneapolis is a beautiful city in itself. We all are 10 minutes walking distance from a neighborhood park. We all have access to just such beautiful things in this city that other people don't have in their cities. And so it's been a pleasure of mine to identify the areas in my ward that we need to make more beautiful and to have people access more. And I'll tell you, Laurie Avenue North is one. Laurie Avenue is one of the 5 identified cultural corridors. And as a council member, when I'm there, that's not what I see. That's not what I feel. So I've been working on we've got some additional funding in our arts department to look at how we beautify these areas. I've been having lots of meetings with local developers and people who are interested in development projects in the city to look at Laurie Avenue, look at it as a blank canvas and what can we do to beautify it? How can we make it this beautiful corridor for North Minneapolis? How can we build community? And so there's a lot of these projects are about building relationships and, selling my ward and the space I have available to people, which I'm down for any day. I love selling this community to people with money who can invest in it. And so, that has been the charge for me in my office, over our time in office. And I think it's going to continue. Any vacant lot I have in this ward, I want to see it activated. I want something beautiful, whether that's a single family home or fourplex, or if that's a park space, additional park space, I want to make sure that we're beautifying the neighborhood and, we're building on that. I have a feeling we're going to be the model of when a neighborhood or part of the city is seen as, it's just so many misunderstandings about what North Minneapolis is. And North Minneapolis is, in my opinion, the most beautiful place in Minneapolis. It is a small town. Everybody knows everyone. And Mr. McFarlane can tell you this because he's a Northsider too.
That's right.
There's beautiful parts of North Minneapolis that most people have never seen because they subscribe to the negativity that's around North Minneapolis. And so as a council member, my number one mission is to make sure that people know what really happens here, that we have a sense of community here that I've never seen anywhere else in this city. And we love beautiful spaces and we want opportunities for entertainment. And we have a huge development going here on the river, the Upper Harbor Terminal, which is going to be a concert arena, housing, commercial space. And so that is a once in a lifetime opportunity for this part of the city. And we're going to make sure we get the best out of that for this community.
I think that is wonderful. And, last week on the show, there was discussion about the Upper Harbor Terminal. And as you mentioned, it is a once in a lifetime opportunity. It's the development, the redevelopment of almost 1 mile of shoreline of the most iconic river in the United States.
Absolutely.
Right? And to be able to kind of rethink what will be going on here and to insert, making sure that we can access this beauty and we can benefit from it, we can build wealth, we can build community capacity through it. I think it's just wonderful. I'm super excited that you're working on this and kind of using this lens to look at them. I have one quick idea that maybe could be useful to discuss. You know, you mentioned Lowry Avenue having a great concentration of artists, something that has happened in other places in town and also in a lot of other communities is kind of rebranding or rethinking as a cultural corridor. You know, Lowry Avenue as a cultural corridor, as an arts corridor, whole city, and making sure that we can invite artists to help start up some places if there are vacant vacant storefronts, you know, work with landlords to find easy ways for artists to access them. And you'll see growth and opportunity continue to occur. And what do you think about
You're right. You're right. I mean, it is a cultural corridor. And the next steps for me are building up exactly the way you just explained it. You know, like having people to activate the space, but also having people to develop it. And unfortunately, it's just a lot of vacant lots, more than you would like to see on a cultural corridor, you know? So we're gonna have to take the time. I mean, because it also, it's the border from Ward 4 to 5. The south side of the street is Ward 5. The north side is Ward 4. So we also have to make sure we collaborate, you know, with the other council member in North Minneapolis to activate that space in tandem. Like, I don't want my side of the ward to be like fully activated and then across the street, there's nothing. And I think there's an appetite for that between all North Side elected officials, no matter what body of government, that we want to see that space activated. We want it to be a big part of our community. And I'm certain that we're headed in the right direction for that. But you are so right. We are going to create a space for artists to enjoy and for the neighborhood too.
Wonderful.
And Antonio, I just want to add to what you say. The Mississippi River is not just one of the most iconic in the U.S., it's one of the most iconic rivers in the world. In every school, we learn about the great rivers. My first knowledge about was in high school. It's the Amazon, the Yellow River, the Mississippi. So it is such a responsibility, right, to having a renewal in the beginning of this river that everywhere in the world it's famous. Now it's the river that represents the United States, like the Amazon represents Brazil, you know.
That's right. And
so
I'm
City Council Beton. Yes. Listen, yes.
Thanks.
And
okay, let's go from there. Listen, Latricia, thank you so much. Thank you for being here, and we're gonna have you back. Always good to see you. Apologies for my technology, but I'm glad that I've got an able team and we've got the thing rolling. Let me pivot from here and move on to our next guest. Latricia, thank you. We'll see you later on.
Thank you.
Thank you, council member.
For sure. Our next guest is Catherine Grenier. And if I'm saying that wrong, she'll correct me in a minute. But she's the executive director and oversees the overall development and management of a organization entitled Rebuilding Minnesota Together. And they work trying to reimagine and support new efforts to rebuild communities. Well, let me ask her to come on, first of all, and explain what Rebuilding Together Minnesota is and what it does. Kathy, how you doing?
I'm good. Hi, Al. Thanks for having me on. And it is Griner.
Griner. Okay. Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Hi. Yeah. Rebuilding Together Minnesota. We do home repair for low-income families and homeowners. So what we're trying to do is keep people safe in their homes, in homes that don't make them sick due to mold, etc. And so we just want to make sure that we're able to prevent homelessness, that people can get in and out of their homes safely, and that house, once they're in it, does not add to any health issues. So that's the basics of what we're doing.
Okay, tell us some stories about the impact that your work has on communities and individuals' lives.
Well, the photo that was just up was actually a young man in South Minneapolis, and he has cerebral palsy, and his grandparents do after school care for him. And when he got home from school, or wanted to go anywhere, his grandfather would have to hoist him on his back and carry him in and out of the house because they didn't have a wheelchair ramp. to get in and out. So we brought in a team of volunteers and created a ramp that he can now get in and out of. He has friends over after school. It's really made life, it's opened up life for him. And so that's one of the areas that we just really, like I said, make life so much richer by allowing people to have that independence back in their lives.
That's awesome. Another story?
Another story. Gosh. You know, I've been doing this for about 24 years now, and there are, they seem to run together. We were talking about another ramp that we did the other day, and I remember a homeowner explaining to me that she had to position her walker underneath her kitchen stairs, and then she would scoot up her back steps on her behind so she could get into the house safely. Then she would come around and reach through the kitchen window to pull the walker inside. And so that's, we make do. A lot of people, especially here in the Midwest, we get really good at making do with what we have and not expecting, not asking for a lot of help. And so that's where the work that we do comes into place. We want to make sure people are safe. So, you know, installing a wheelchair ramp for someone so they don't have to haul that walker inside a window is what we're doing.
How do you pay for this work? Where does your money come from? And
so it's a combination of many streams. We've got some funding from the state of Minnesota and from the Department of Housing and Urban Development. So we have some federal and some state money. We do have private donations. We raise some of that funding through special events. So it's really coming from all over. We do also, private individuals are donating funds towards this. So we're doing a balancing act and bringing it in from all over the place.
Go ahead, Antonio.
Kathy, a quick question. It sounds like you're doing fantastic work. I was a little bit curious. You mentioned, you know, the example of the wheelchair access, for example, as something that really makes a huge difference in a family's life. You also mentioned during your introduction issues related to mold, for example, and houses making people who are living there ill in a way, right? Mm-hmm. Having all that exposure. What are the, like, if you were to rank, which are the issues that you are seeing the most and that you're working the most on right now?
Probably one of the primary requests that we're getting, two are ranking right up there. One is roofing. We actually, a few years ago, through a grant from Minnesota Housing, were able to start a statewide roofing program. So folks around the state who are low income can request a roof through us, and we'll work with local contractors to put that on. Basically, that's one of the most important structures in your home. If your roof is leaking, you've got all kinds of other problems underneath that home that can lead to mold and health problems. And then I'd say the other kind of big service that people are requesting from us are installation of wheelchair ramps. A lot of the older adults that we're working with, you know, we've worked with people who haven't been able to leave their home for 2 or 3 years because of just disabilities that don't allow them to navigate stairs. So, you know, we've got three dedicated teams of volunteers that work from, well, this year they started working in March. And so they go out once, each team goes out once a month and builds a wheelchair ramp around the Twin Cities. And that's their social avenue to get together. And this is a ramp that a team built in about a 2-day period. And then they'll go out the following month and do another one. So
that sounds great. Now something, I have two follow-up questions.
Okay.
One is, so you do, I had at first thought that you're doing work only in the Twin Cities, but you mentioned you do statewide work. So you're a resource throughout Minnesota.
We do. So about, like I said, about 3-4 years ago, we did expand to do a statewide service area. And we were invited by folks down in Southwest Minnesota. So in Windham, Worthington, and Jackson. And so we started working with those communities, and we've actually set up an office down there with staff. And so we do a more holistic, we're looking at the aging in place spectrum. We're looking at doing home repair on a whole level down there. And then again, we're doing the statewide roofing program. So that's looking at pretty much anywhere in the state being able to help folks with that. It's a limited number per year, but we are constantly seeking funds that allow us to do that. So we do a pretty broad service area.
Fantastic. My second question was, I bet there would be a lot of people who would be interested in helping to build a wheelchair ramp, for example. And as you said, there's a social aspect to it, you know, to be part of a team. How would somebody volunteer that to your organization?
If folks are looking to volunteer, we'd invite them to take a look at our website, which is rtmn.org. And on there will be a tab for getting involved. And send us a quick email, tell us what you're interested in, and we'll see where we can put you to work. We are looking for a team of volunteers to be, you know, additional ramp teams. So if you want to get together with some folks and start constructing ramps, again, it's a monthly commitment. So we want to make sure that, you know, it's something that you're really interested in doing. But when you look at putting together a ramp, at the end of a two-day period, you've really created something fantastic. And a unique thing about our ramps is that we are building them on a modular plan. And so when the family is done with the ramp, we'll come out and disassemble it and reuse the parts for someone else. So it's not a ramp that a family is stuck with to try and figure out what to do if it's no longer needed.
That's amazing. That's wonderful work. Now, are all the improvements you do no cost to the consumer, or are there some things that require financing and that your people that you're helping need to pay for?
So the majority of the work we're doing is at no cost to the homeowner. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the funding that we're comes with, we have to write a mortgage for it, but we set that up as a deferred forgivable mortgage. So most of the time, a roof, which is a high dollar item for us to invest in, we'll set that up on a 5-year deferred forgivable plan. Mm-hmm. So basically that means as long as the family stays in the home for 5 years, they don't make a payment, and it's forgiven at the end of that 5-year period. So basically, we're trying to keep people in their homes and not necessarily fix it up so that they can in turn sell it.
Okay, I like that.
We have a few criteria as far as service eligibility. And most of the time we're looking at clients who are at 50% of the area median income for the county that they're living in. There are extenuating circumstances. We will go as high as 80%. And for some of our aging in place programs where we go in and we'll install grab bars and fall prevention measures, we do have a sliding fee scale. So if an older adult needs something and they maybe make more than our eligibility requirements, there's a sliding fee scale so that they can kick in for part of those materials. But we're really looking at working with the families, and again, making sure that they can live in a safe home that they've called home for many, many years, and just stay there and continue living their lives.
How can people support you, and how can companies support you? I know you need money. Let's make the ask right now.
It is that funding. It's that that unrestricted funding that allows me to have staff that works with all of these homeowners and hires the contractors, oversees the volunteers. It's one thing we don't want to do is turn a bunch of volunteers loose on someone's home without supervising them. So we want to make sure that everything is done safely. We are a licensed contractor in the state of Minnesota, so we are adhering to all of the safety guidelines and the codes and all of that stuff to get this work done. So definitely, thank you for the plug, Al. Yes, definitely. Money is always good, and we will definitely put it to good use.
We'll give people the contact information so that you can know how to call you or email you.
Again, it's please give us a call if you're interested. It would be 651-776-4273, or inviting anyone to look us up on the internet, and that would be www.rtmn.org. I see on the screen, it's also our GiveMin donation website as well. is, and that's a donate now button on our homepage.
Awesome. Okay, well, thank you so much, and please come back and share an update. All right, I'm Al McFarland.
I appreciate the opportunity to share what we do.
Thank you. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. Again, always wonderful conversations. That was excellent. And the opening one as well. We've got more great things to talk about today as well. But we are here with my colleagues, Antonio Rozell here in Minneapolis, and Yoji Sena joining us from Bahia in Brazil. Guys, thank you so much for being here. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk with Alfred Babington Johnson and a colleague about an important event coming up on May 25th. And we also have Coach Leah standing by to give us her report. But also, I wanted to let people know that we are at this program, not finalized yet, but looking at trying to do something special for what we're calling George Floyd Week. And the whole world is approaching a chance and an opportunity to reflect on the horrific murder of George Floyd in South Minneapolis 4 years ago. It'll be 4 years come May 25th. And what we are proposing and are declaring is that the week prior to that Saturday, the 25th, even from Sunday to Sunday, from about the 19th to the 26th, be held up in community and around the world as George Floyd Week. Wrap your minds around that. We owe it to George Floyd. We owe it to the events and to the transformation, to the uprising that occurred after it, to pay attention to it. And we're proposing that we call that George Floyd Week and do things here and in community anywhere around the state of Minnesota and around the world to reflect on the illuminating experience of seeing how law enforcement failed and how we pulled the cover off of something that was going on but hidden or lied about, and now it was in plain sight. So we're going to be doing, hopefully, it's not confirmed yet, but our intention is to do live programs every day from Monday through Friday at minimum, and possibly on Saturday as well, live from George Floyd Square. And we want to invite those who listen to us from anywhere around the country, anywhere around the world, to send us a note. You can send it to me directly. Send it to my email. It's easy. This one's easy to remember. It's al@insightnews.com. al@insightnews.com. If you want to bring your voice to the discussion, talk about where you were, what you did, what you felt, what you experienced, the trauma you may have experienced in watching the video again and again and again, and how that informed your a sense of what your duty and obligation are to be community and to build community. That's the discussion we want to have. And our hope is that we'll invite members of the family and members of other families who've lost sons and daughters to police violence or to violence of any sort. And we've got plenty, unfortunately, to talk with and talk to. But we want to have that conversation because we think we ought to have it. We want to also connect with civic and social leaders, the people that were in office and that are in office now, the people that ran the police department, the highway department, the state house. Let's get a sense on, in reflection, what do we learn? What do we know about ourselves illuminated by this tragic and horrific event that moved us towards a moment of both uprising and both a moment of restructuring or re-envisioning what community means. So keep your eyes and ears open. We'll be promoting and talking about it. And if you have some suggestions or ideas, drop me a note, al@insightnews. We want you involved. Our goal is to talk to people around the country and around the world. Yoji, talk to people not only in Brazil and perhaps people in continental Africa, people in Europe, who were moved by and whose lives, in a sense, were reset, redirected by what they witnessed. And I think that's a real thing. So with that, pay attention, not pay attention, but stay tuned. We'll get more into that. Let me bring my next guest on board, and that's Alfred Babington Johnson. Brother Babington, as I call him. How you doing, man?
I'm doing nicely, Al. How are you?
I am absolutely well, and thank you for asking. And are we going to have Tanya with us as well?
Is she? Absolutely.
Okay. I don't know if she's here yet. There she is. Tanya.
There she is.
There she is. Well, listen, let's talk about what's going on, because you're addressing the same issue, reconciliation in our community, and you've got a major event coming up. Why don't you talk about that first, Babington, and extend the invitation to it, and talk about the role that you and Tanya both play to make this event happen.
Okay, well, Al, you know, one thing that I can say about you is that you were there from the beginning. We have walked this walk together from the very inception of the Stair Step Initiative in 1991 of the summer. And and you know that our passion and our clear sense of commitment is to the fact that community itself is a power that can elevate. And we think that African-American people desperately need to reignite the spirit of community, that we might be able to deal with the disparities and the disparagements that come in our way. So we've been on that journey for over 32 years, Al, and we have a unique opportunity that we're taking advantage of this year, and that is to celebrate the artistic contributions of African Americans to the state of Minnesota. You know, Al, there's so many people across the country that think that when you think African Americans and you think Minnesota, you have to be talking about Kirby Puckett or Prince. Well, notwithstanding the contributions that these diminutive ones have made into our community, there's so much more. And you know that, and you embody that, Al, in the work that you've done in journalism down through the years. But we want to seize the opportunity to make everyone aware nationally and internationally, Yogi, the fact
Yogi,
that
Yogi, yes.
Yes, that there's soul in Minnesota.
Yes, yes.
And so at U.S. Bank Stadium, we are then on the 25th of May, that Saturday of Memorial Day, going to convene the community in U.S. Bank Stadium, Al. Where we're going to celebrate the music and the arts and the crafts and the business and the imagination of African Americans in the state of Minnesota. And let me just say this about this wonderful one that is joining me on today. This Tanya that's called Coleman. Ooh, Al, if you don't know, now you know.
Mm-hmm.
Is phenomenal. This is a complicated transaction that we're bringing forward. And to do it effectively, we needed the top line event coordinators in the United States. And so we have some. I happen to have one that is my wife, Anna Babington Johnson. She does a thing. And she and Tanya have collaborated on many things, but Tanya is our senior event coordinator for this. And I can't begin to tell you, Al, how pleased I am that God has provided her into this mix. She's a worthy one.
Tanya, well, that's called high praise, right?
Woo, that's an intro for you, isn't it? Whoa, I love it.
Welcome. Tell us about the event. You know, we've got a highlight of it already, but go deeper and explain the mechanics, logistics, and the value proposition, why this matters for all of us.
Oh, absolutely. Well, first of all, I'm a transplant here to the Twin Cities. I've been here 12 years. And so I live in a predominantly white area of Minnesota. So when Babington came to me with this idea, I was like, yes, Blackness, celebrate it in a big way. Let's do it. Let's bring everybody we can, small businesses, musicians, dancers, spoken word artists. Let's just bring all the arts together in one place. And then the audacity to do it in U.S. Bank Stadium? What? Celebrating Blackness on the biggest stage that we possibly can in the Twin Cities? It was an easy yes for me, Al. I could just say that. Easy, easy yes. So U.S. Bank Stadium, we are bringing together some of the top musicians in this state, from the Steels, Jamecia Bennett, Ron Davis, and the Remnant. We've got No Minneapolis coming through. We have amassed, now this is the power of the one called Babington. He has amassed a mass choir that is coming down, comprised of four different choirs across the state. And we are going to just be praising the Lord. We are going to be praising Blackness. It's just going to be a party from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. So we are super excited. We've got live artists coming down. We have a community mural. Let me just tell you about the community mural. This is near and dear to my heart as a graphic designer and event planner. So
now, just a minute, let me interrupt 1 second. When she says she's a graphic designer, my God, Tanya and her team, and Al, we've been running ads and insight every week, save the date ads. But anyway, and the one that you have up now, the power of the art, the immediacy and urgency of the colors, you know, are all out of Tanya and her team as she's helping us to bring this thing forward. So anyway, I just needed this to acknowledge this art is hall hangable, wall hangable.
Well, I appreciate that. When you gave me the
Frameable.
There we go. Yeah. When you gave me the task of trying to come together a design element that would embody Blackness, vibrancy, color, stop you in your tracks. You're flipping through your Insight News and boom, that ad hits you. You're scrolling through your feed and boom, our ads hit you. So that was what the assignment was. And I'm pretty sure we delivered on that. So thank you for entrusting us with your branding. So let me tell you about the community mural. So we have the infamous Sean Garrison coming down to the U.S. Bank Stadium for Minnesota Soul. And he is going to be creating a 24-foot, it's going to be 36-foot community mural where he is going to embody our tagline, which is Babington.
Our village, our song.
Our village, our song. So Sean is going to take that on and he is going to embody that in art form on this big mural. Not only is he going to do that, but he is going to invite the community members, whoever comes to U.S. Bank Stadium, to leave their artistic imprint on this piece. So it is literally going to be a piece that is created by community, which is exactly what Babington was trying to do, to bring us all together and to make our mark and to leave there with the feeling of togetherness and this village that we're creating. And so we're actually physically creating a village piece on canvas. So we're really excited about that. He will be down there doing live art. Noval Noir will be down there doing live art. We've got Flan Manley coming down to do live art. We do have a dance stage. We're going to be featuring Les Jolies Petites, Hollywood Studio of Dance, and others. So we are super excited about the energy. And that's what Babington keeps saying, Tanya, create the energy, create the energy. I'm like, well, we're going to create some energy on May 25th down at U.S. Bank Stadium. So we are super, super excited to bring this forth. And we're hoping that this will be an annual thing because Blackness cannot be contained to 1 year, nor 1 month, I might add. So we hope that this is going to be a yearly event and we're really excited.
Tanya, Babington, thank you both for being here. And Babington, you're going to bring me some more people in the next weeks who are involved. So we'll keep this conversation going. We think it's critical, I think it's important, and we think it's worthy of lifting up and celebrating the celebration that we're going to do. So we're good.
Thank you, Al, for continuing to be a major griot in our space.
Do you need support? How can people support you?
You know, the support that we're really looking for at this point, because I don't know if I mentioned this to you before, Al, but God is good. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard that.
I've heard.
Ooh, my God, look out now. Let's not turn this into something else. But God is a way maker. Mm-hmm. And he's allowed us this opportunity to do this in a unique way this year. It's free to the public. It's open. You can come and be involved. And we're hoping that what people offer as support going forward is a new sense of inspiration, a new sense of aspiration, a liftedness as we walk through this community and make it a better place.
Awesome. Babington, thank you, my friend. And we'll have you back again next week and keep telling the story. Okay. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. And I want you to hang out because we've got more for you coming up in a couple of seconds. Coach Leah, I think she's here. And we have been blessed by connecting with her to do a sports update. What I love about that is I learn about sports every week. She has interesting things to say, analyses. But I love that Insight News has Leah on board as our sports editor and putting us into an information flow that we've wanted to be in, but that we can only be in now under the tutelage and the guidance of an expert authority on sports by virtue of her own activity in sports, but also her leadership as a mentor and a coach. Coach Leah, good afternoon. Welcome. Good to see you again, my friend.
Hi. Hello, everybody, and happy Tuesday.
What's going on with you? What's on your talking list today?
Well, let's see. Let's start with the NBA. So our Minnesota Timberwolves were able to sweep the Phoenix Suns despite the valiant efforts of Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. And so they are off the rest of the week. They get to relax, you know, do a little bit of resting of their bones and so on and so forth. And that's a good look. This is the first time that the Minnesota Timberwolves have ever swept anybody in the series, the postseason playoffs. And so, and did it in Phoenix, you know, had a chance to not even worry about having to come back home and feel the energy of the home crowd. As you know, as Leah B. Olson was telling us about last week, they didn't have to rely on that. And so here's their opportunity to rest and get ready for their next opponent that they will face. And so we're super excited about our Minnesota Timberwolves. There was a mishap that happened with only 2 minutes left of their last game against Phoenix. And it was unfortunate, but their head coach, Coach Fitch, was injured, has a pretty mm-hmm. severe knee injury, actually. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to get back to that when I talked a little bit more about the local community and things that I want to talk about locally, because I will talk about local sports interests today and a little bit about some global as well. So, but I had a question for you. I know that you were saying, Al, that you were very interested in watching basketball and did see the game, the NCAA finals game with or the tournament, the Final Four tournament, and you really enjoyed that. So mm-hmm. have you been as interested in watching our Timberwolves right now?
I am. It's a new interest. You know, just haven't been haven't been tuned in to professional sports for a long, long, long time. But watching the women's sports will also make me pay more attention to the men's tournament as well. So there's a connection there that the buzz about the elevation of women's sports has created for me. So the answer is yes.
Outstanding. How about the rest of our esteemed panel here? Tell us about
we South Americans. I know about Miss Cardozo in the women's basketball collegiate because she's Brazilian, so she was being bragged all over the news here. I'm rekindling my energy with soccer. So I'm dreaming about be able to go to the stadium here to watch my first ever live soccer game. Never happened in my life.
Wow. Well, then you also please make sure that you check out the links as well, because, you know, especially when the Chicago Sky comes to town, you know, they're hyping up Camila Cardoza and Angel Reese playing together on the same team. And they're in camp right now, preseason camp right now. And so we'll get our first looks at how that chemistry of them playing on the same team will be able to work for them. So it's going to be very, very exciting. But I'm soccer.
Antonio, what are your thoughts? Are you into sports?
You know, I'm going to say that I'm kind of following on the pattern of Al McFarland, that I have not paid attention to professional sports for an extremely long time. But I must also say that I have been very intrigued as I've been participating in the shows most recently, listening to Coach Leah and also hearing about Al's growing interest in sport. I've been thinking, well, you know, maybe I might really like it. You know, it's just, it's one of those things that life is so busy sometimes, and I just, you know, haven't put the time or effort, but it's a wonderful component of community as well, because it's something that everyone shares living in a place and rooting for the home team.
Absolutely.
One thing, let me say, Coach Leo, Antonio, I know, is an avid cyclist, bicycle rider. So you can see him around town. So he's active in personal engagement. And I'm into that. I'm into riding a bicycle, not as heavily as he is, but that's a new passion that I discovered when I turned around 60 years old. So I've been riding since that time, less and more, more and less. But then I also loved a personal sport of martial art. And my preference had been my study of one of the martial arts forms. Well, I say that to introduce and to bring Yoji in, because he's a martial arts master in capoeira. And so there are other ways for people to get involved. And the question is, what's the connection between personal engagement and fulfillment, but also understanding how teams work together as well? Yoji, how does your personal being involved in capoeira affect your ability to either engage, support, or appreciate other organized sports activity?
Great question.
Well, even though that capoeira interact with another individual, apparently only another individual, and it is a community sport, right? It involves the people who are surrounding, and I believe it is the only sport that involves music. So, and that's very sometimes dubious. People just right now, they are really understanding that is a sport in the common sense, what people understand of sport, not just a folkloric the manifestation, as it is also, because, you know, sports culture, but people tend to see just as an event. And here in Brazil now, the I would say the fad in capoeira became the competitions, sportive competitions in the mode of UFC. So there is a big league now, it's called VMB, and then pop up several other smaller ones. That is because always a dance, and you know, and now they're seeing this sportive, you know, pointing, because there is a movement that are trying to take capoeira to the Olympics and to be recognized as Olympic sport. But collective sport, and we any martial art, we train collectively. We even though that we might individually, we always train collectively with other core students. And the ambient that generally it's built upon in martial arts schools is one of family, of brotherhood with your peers, you know, a lot of complicity. And, you know, it's really paying attention to sports in general. So I mentioned the question that I'm a soccer fan. And for example, in Brazil, how the last 2-3 years, how the soccer became hyper-professional in the level of the leagues in Europe. You know, there's a few Americans that are owning now Brazilian teams. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. He's causing a lot of polemics here because he's questioning the whole referee system, if he's really honest, if he favors other ones, or he's being invited to talked to Congress about his accusations. So he's causing quite a stir presence now of American professional owners into, because soccer teams became now companies. Traditionally here, there were community clubs being for one immigrant community or a neighborhood, and now it's really became enterprises. So sports and martial arts, you know, are very important as a formation tool of youth, you know, be able to learn how that we do live in a competitive world, that to learn that we do need to compete with following the rules, that we eat honestly. So this is very important to the community at large, you know. And the power that those arena sports have to really rally a lot of people for those minutes or where those that game is going is remarkable. You know, sometimes it's used by government part of the bread and circles stuff, but it's very important to contribute to the pride of, you know, it's like, even though I don't follow sports, American sports avidly, but I have the pride when I hear about the teams of Minnesota, right? It elevates the self-esteem of who roots for those teams, you know? So it's very important.
So it's ironic that you talk about, you know, game or sports that are wanting to be, you know, an Olympic sport and so on and so forth. And I wanted to just really quick talk about the 2024 Olympics that will be in Paris this year, this summer, July 26th through August 11th. And so, you know, we want to encourage everybody to really pay attention to the Olympics, because for historically what happens in the world as far as relations, you know, global relations has everything to do with the Olympic sports. And so we'll be able to see just a lot of things outside of the games talked about, because there's just so many other things going on in the world, especially, you know, the campus riots. But I know you guys will talk about that in more detail another time. But I also wanted
And this year is for the first time break down competition in the Olympics. Remarkable.
No doubt.
Our culture becoming global.
Absolutely. So let me just kind of close out my sports segment today by just thanking you guys for adding some colorfulness with your views on where you guys are with sports. And I'm gonna continue to come in on Tuesdays and share some stats and some facts and some current events that are going on. But I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the Minnesota Vikings. And they just finished a successful, what I consider a very successful draft. They had two first round picks, and they, with their number 10 pick, selected JJ McCarthy, who is a quarterback from Michigan. So that's a very interesting pick, very great pick. And then trade from Jacksonville, they were able to select Dallas Turner from Alabama. And so that, again, a really, really great pick. In the fourth round, with the 108th pick, they were able to get Kyrie Jackson, who is from Oregon, a cornerback. And then in the sixth round, they had two picks, Xavier Rouse and from Oklahoma, and then also Will Richard from Alabama. Then in the seventh round, with the 230th pick, isn't that crazy? They are still picking people, all the way up to 230, but even more than that. They were able to select Michael Jurgens, who was a center from Wake Forest, you know, trying to get their offensive line a little heftier there. So that was a good pick, even at 230 in the seventh round. You would think that this kid is probably not going to make the team, but he has a really, really great chance of making the, if not the regular squad, for sure the practice squad. And then
we're down to our last 30 seconds, Leah. We've run over time here. But listen, thank you. Thank you so much. You know what? We wanted to have a conversation about the campus challenges, but we cannot do that time-wise today. But that's an important thing for us to look at what's happening in Palestine, Israel, the conflict there. And perhaps in another show this week or next week, we'll come back to that. We think it's really, really important that we bring up voices that are experiencing from any and all sides the horrific consequence of the war in Gaza. Well, with that, I want to thank Yoji Sena and thank Antonio Rozelle, who were going to lead that discussion.